Welcome to episode 48 of the Draft Lab Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Phillips, aka J2S Josh. And Chris is still on some much-deserved vacay after his work drove him into the ground. So, I got the assist my good buddy to Jordan, aka Benji. We're going to be going over what some of our hypotheses are for Alchemy Horizons Baldur's Gate. That way we can go back over them at the end of the format to laugh at how wrong we were. I mean, to confirm that we are obviously correct about everything. How's it going today, Benji?
Hey, Josh, thanks for having me. It's good to be back, and I will be the first to tell you that I have no idea what's going to be happening in Alchemy Horizons Baldur's Gate, because I don't even know what all of the cards are going to actually do. So I'm excited to hypothesize on what they might do and what I think might happen, but I have a feeling I'm going to end up looking like an idiot.
It's all good, man. We're just here to have a good time.
Oh, you know it.
That brings us to the weekly update. People have been finding solace in playing mid quick draft because everyone has been so over SNC for quite a while. That's right. People would rather quick draft than deal with another SNC draft. That brings us to the next step, which is we finally get a new set this week, and it has a lot in common with an old set. By in common, I mean about half the cards were directly ported over from AFR.
And all of the good black-red ones are there. While we don't have things like Ginny Windseer and Scion of
Stygia. So, we would do a pack one, pick one, but I have to save myself for Chris when he gets back, or he'll get jealous.
And you know I just take the young red dragon, so it's not worth it.
Are you excited to start pounding these out?
Oh yes, you know it.
My first hypothesis is that, surprise, 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 Rakdos is going to be the best color pairing. This is based off previous experience with some of these cards, and while most of the really good ones are back, Rakdos also got a ton of new great rares, so even though we won't be rocking Westgate Region or Gelatinous Cube, we have a lot of new platinum hits like Raphael Fiendish Savior.
Totally agree, and I think that the more interesting thought is not going to be if Rakdos is the best deck, but whether black or red is the strongest color. Because I think that they're kind of running away with it on the back of constant AFR synergies and then the access to like new abilities like double team. I have no doubt that Rakdos will be the deck that I feel best about going in on day one.
Everybody likes a good double team, right?
Oh, you know it.
Next hypothesis is blue is going to be the worst color by far. I think most people have thought, hey, this doesn't look good, but I think it's being undersold how bad it looks. It got a lot of the bad cards back from AFR, but it took some of the ones that actually you could make it work. Like, you don't have Bar the Gate, so you can't do some kind of tempo deck where you just counter it out and get some value. It doesn't have Ginny Windseer, so you don't actually have that nice little cheap win condition that sets you up for the rest of the game. Or Scion of Stygia, which helped keep you in the game while you won in the air. It replaced them with more below average cards. I don't know, it might actually be pretty close to being unplayable. You're also missing out on all the busted bombs that you'd get past, which was one of the real payoffs to be in blue.
You're telling me you don't like cards like Case the Joint and you come upon the Villain's Lair? Because these are very medium cards. And I think there's one blue card that I'm kind of hype about is the Young Blue Dragon. But I just remember like the adventures in general being absurd in every format, like right back down to modern and everything. And I feel like the Young Blue Dragon, you're able to spend two mana to get like a mini Behold the Multiverse, like just scry one, draw one, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
And you're also able to cash in like late game a 5-mana 3/3 flyer. And so if there's a spot where blue is going to be playable, I think it's going to be the combination of the fact that no one is drafting blue, so you're getting a lot of like rares, uncommons, higher rarity type stuff, as well as the fact that the Young Blue Dragon is going to end up being a decent glue piece for these decks. But I think blue's not going to be great.
Were you the person that took Avon Windreader over Wild Mongrel?
Oh, no, no, no. I would take Wild Mongrel over Cephalid Looter because I'm a mad lad.
And we just lost our viewership.
Yep.
Everyone's like, how old are you guys?
Join us in the boomer chat of Draft Lab.
I hurt my knee sitting down.
Hey, that was pregame confidentiality.
Oh, crap. I was just being a smart ass about me. All right. Number three, five color is more viable than three color. This one came from our buddy Circovitz, and I think he might be right. Always got to shout him out on here, you know? The basis for that is that there isn't good fixing for two colors, and multiple cards fix for any color. So if you have that utility, then you might as well splash power cards in multiple colors once the same cost your mana base as it would be to splash one thing. Because when you're just putting in something that taps for any color, it's the same kind of dealio.
I totally agree with this take. Coming from the streets of New Capenna, where we had common fixtures in the form of two different lands, one that was tricolor and one that was dual color with upside. And now we only have non-basic lands at, I'm not sure if it's common or uncommon, but they are single color lands. So we actually have no dual color lands outside of the rare Baldur's Gate itself.
Which is awful.
Which leads me to think that if you are going to play a multicolor deck, it's going to be on the back of cards like Pilgrim's Eye, Underscopet Myolid, or whatever. It's like a 2 and a green, 1/2. When it ETBs and when it leaves the battlefield, you get a 1/1 sapling or something like that. And it taps for any color, as well as the uncommon 3-mana 2/2 that taps for any color and scries 2 on ETB.
Cuckoo Kachu.
Yeah. Most of these cards that seem remotely playable in the fixing department do fix for all five colors. So it's likely that you'll be in like a 1 or 2 color base, either something like green that makes multicolor mana or a color like red that produces a lot of treasure. And from there, you'll just spawn off into any playable cards that you come upon during the draft. But I don't see a lot of reason to be three colors coming from the streets, where it didn't make a lot of sense to be three colors either.
Or you just do 5CG like at IPA days.
That's the hope. That is the hope.
All right. Next one. The speed of the format will be slightly slower than AFR. I think that even though we got some nice power, Price of Loyalty being gone is a huge difference in the speed of the format. And the Treasure Ogre, while he was only like, and sometimes, made games that just ended on the spot when you get three treasures off him. So while we have a lot of the platinum hits back, I think it'll slow down just a little bit.
While I am going to miss Hoarding Ogre that I had honestly forgot about, I do think that the introduction of this new black 2-drop, I forget the name, but it's a 2/1 death touch, and if it's attacking and dies, you draw a card, is really going to lead to, you want to have cards enter the battlefield early. Like, it's still going to be a quick format coming from, I could see it being comparable to Streets of New Capenna, honestly, where if you don't make plays on like turn 2, turn 3, like you could definitely be in some trouble. That being said, I think you make a great point about Price of Loyalty being a card that would be a 3-mana threaten as well as +2/+0, and that +2/+0 end up having a lot of legs in the format. There were often times that you were just casting Price of Loyalty to end the game on the spot without a sacrifice outlet, and this format, it does feel a bit slower than that, but I think it's tough to make like minor calls like that before having ever put a card in play for myself personally.
Which I guess leads us into, I could just throw this hypothesis in there, of that this is going to be a tempo-based format. Whether it's using life gain in the green-white deck to combat tempo or just trying to curve out. Either way, some form of tempo is going to be at play early in this.
Yeah, I think that's certainly interesting. And I think that one of the ways that you can get tempo in this format is from the front side of the adventure cards, because you're not actually losing a card when you cast the front side of an adventure. And most of those front sides are late game cards that have some great abilities early. If we look at the Hippogriff, it's a 1-mana indestructible. So if you're able to like curve a 2-drop into like another 2-drop and get some combat going on turn 3, you can squeeze in the front side of the Hippogriff and then slam it on turn 4, getting like a 2-for-1 kind of value. You look at like the Sword Coast Serpent, 7-mana 6/6 late game like bruiser, but it also has a 2-mana like return target creature to its owner's hand. So you've really got a lot of options there. And I think that the adventure cards could play into the tempo idea.
The next one is the best pack one, pick one is Basilisk Caller, because it's cheap, colorless, and goes in pretty much any deck.
Let's go. You love to hear it. 10 out of 10. Everyone agrees. There's no doubt. The crowd's going wild. And I mean, yeah, I'm here for it. I haven't really looked at the set that in depth to make a call that like one particular card is going to be great in comparison to some of the other cards. But Basilisk Caller was a classic hit in the olden days, and I have no doubt that Death Touch and Lifelink will transition well into the current modern era. Not a whole lot to say there, other than Eater of Virtue was a lot better when it was Bone Splitter and Mirrodin than it was in Kamigawa.
Weird, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Specialization, we looked back on as one of the most confusing abilities ever produced. It took until actually playing with it to get clarification how it works. So, for clarity, it is at sorcery speed, and flipping it works how the theme seems instead of the letter of the law. So if you pitch a card of the same color as the card, you can only choose the monocolored version, even though by the letter of the law, you should be able to choose anyone that has that color in it.
I think this is for the best. I haven't actually seen any of the cards in action yet. I am excited to watch some early access later tonight. Spoiler, we're recording this the day of early access. But I will say that I like the idea of like kind of limiting the ability. Like these cards already seem very powerful. And so if you could just pitch any black card to any black like specialized card and get any of the versions, I mean, it seems like these cards would just be very much taking over the format. And so it feels like this kind of plays in the way that I would imagine and hope that it would going into the set, having no actual experience yet. So I'm happy with this decision of how the mechanic works.
Yeah. All right. So the biggest, of course, they have that card is going to be the Hourglass Coven. It just does so much for 6 mana. And if they don't counter it, you get 3 guys, all of which are relevant. That's 9/9 worth of power for 6 mana with abilities like, oh, I'm just going to drain you for 2 every turn. I'm going to mill you for 5 every turn. Like you get 3 of those or you get 2 of those plus the +1/+1 on the original one.
So what I'm hearing from you, Josh, between this hypothesis and the Basilisk Collar hypothesis is, are you thinking this is going to be more of a Prince format? Like, you thinking these rares are going to be very important? Because I haven't really looked too much at the rares myself. And so typically for me, it's like, I'll figure them out later. But it seems like you've paid a good amount of attention to the upper rarities. So I'm excited to hear kind of your take on this, because I don't even know what the Hourglass Coven does. I've only seen some memes on Twitter where it has like 75,000 words on it. And I'm sure it's insane, but what are your thoughts here? Like, it seems like you have been drawn to the rarities.
Well, there are definitely some high-end Prince cards, but I think it's going to be a good balance. It's not necessarily going to be a Prince or a Pauper format.
Okay. Interesting.
Because there are a lot of powerful commons, even though there's no Inspiring Overseer.
Which is, I think, going to be a welcome refreshment that I can trade my citizen tokens wherever I can find them with the Inspiring Overseer that is Priest of Ancient Lore.
Right. That flying makes a huge difference there.
It really does.
All right. So the card that I think will be the most underrated early is Patriarch's Humiliation. I think that card is nuts in a tempo-based format because it's 1 mana, bolt something.
Makes a lot of sense to me. It is certainly a card that I overlooked a bit. And the more I think about it, like you're not really making tokens per se, but you do have like the white 2-drop that you'll conjure up like a second copy of it or whatnot with double team. Soldier of the Watch is the card that I'm trying to think of, but I do think that it will be very powerful, no doubt. I do think that Patriarch's Humiliation will be very powerful because it's more or less a 1 mana removal spell. And it will just be a matter of being able to squeeze it in on curve and not into open mana because you can kind of get blown out. But there's not a whole lot of instant speed interaction on the other side early in the turn. So I think all of this is convincing me that you're spot on, that Patriarch's Humiliation will be great.
I think white-red's probably the deck that most wants it.
I'm really excited to try some white-red aggro decks early in the format. I think that the red 1-drop that can give perpetually haste to any card in your hand, I think it is, works really well with the double team mechanic. And I think that as well as, yeah, the Patriarch's Humiliation, like there's just a lot of ability to craft your early turns in the white red deck with 1 and 2 drops. And I'm excited to see how that plays out.
So Benji,
yeah,
what do you got for us for some of your hypotheses?
All right. My main hypothesis is that if Steel Sack is going to be strong again, then bounce spells will be very important, which leads me to believe that as black red might rise in popularity early in the format, as people start to realize that blue is unplayable, blue might then become a very nice meta call in like week 1.5, week 2. Like after the first pieces of content come out post release, I'm sure that we're going to have a ton of blue is really bad. And once that happens, like you're going to be in that AFR spot where you can end up with things like multiple rares, like a couple copies of a 7-drop serpent that's also a 2-mana unsummon. And that kind of idea, along with the card, I think it's called like Blur. It's a 3-mana flicker that draws a card in blue. And there are a lot of ETB effects that are super solid in other colors. And so combining this blur card with things like Vampire Spawn or with Priest of Ancient Lore, things like that could be very powerful if it's also a natural counter that doesn't lose tempo against cards like whatever the threat is. I forget its name, but it's a 4-mana threat this time. So not quite as powerful, but we do still have Deadly Dispute in the format. And the other card that I'm very excited to see a reprint of is You're Ambushed on a Road, the 1 white return a permanent or creature you control to your hand, or give a creature +1/+3 at instant speed. I'm very excited to play with that card.
Yeah, as you're saying about paying attention to the meta, where black red's probably going to be the heavy shift early, I always found in AFR that white green was a pretty good counter to that. And so I wonder if we should start going down that path again.
That's an interesting thought. I hadn't really thought of that, because in my experience, it was the black red deck was able to like take over a couple of like the white green kind of went tall, and the removal of black red kind of like lined up well against the go tall. And it was more so the ability to bounce things that really was something that stuck with me from AFR. However, being able to gain life definitely adds to like the late game and stuff, and it reduces the effect of the threat and stuff if you're not able to sacrifice. So that does make a lot of sense. And I do think that white green in general, like, it has a lot of holdover cards from AFR, and it was a pretty nice meta call in AFR. So I do think that the white green deck is another deck that could really put some things together if you get some of those uncommon life gain enablers like Prosperous Innkeeper, just like in AFR.
Yeah, it was one of those things where if you were both just straight up drafting against bots, you would want to be playing the black red deck. But if you're at a table where four people are fighting over the black red deck and one or two people are going white green, then you could get a white green deck that could crush the black red one.
No doubt about that. If only we could pair in pod.
Yeah. But it just means that like you could get an absurd deck because they were fighting over everything else.
Yes, absolutely. And you would get like your pick of the cat's litter or whatnot of those uncommons that enable the archetype to kind of take that next step.
You got anything else for us?
I didn't realize this, but after talking to a few people in the community, at least one of these is going to be a hot take, in the fact that I think the common adventure dragons in general seem good overall, and that includes the young red dragon. While I did mention that I'm excited about like the young blue dragon earlier, because it has like the mini behold and then has like the Aven Windreader payoff, if you will, for the boomers out there, I do think that while I wish the young red dragon could make a treasure for one red, a la Strike It Rich instead of two mana, where you really do want to be dropping a two drop in this format, I think, because it is still a hobgoblin captain's world and we're just living in it. I do think that the adventure dragons could be one of those cards like the sagas in Neon Dynasty, where like we didn't really quite understand how valuable they were, but just any kind of incremental value that you can squeeze in early in the game, combined with the ability to have a late game, either like a big creature or flyer or something, but that you've already got value from. I think that those cards might be just value picks early in the format. And I'm not sure if that's a hot take or not, but I'm very excited to play with the Adventure Dragons.
You remember when Snapping Drake was good?
No, I keep thinking of Spitting Drake, the one blue pay, one blue in your upkeep from Stronghold, maybe?
No, I mean the 3/2 for 4 flying. It's a generalized card.
Okay.
Remember when it was good and limited?
No. Probably like Mercadian Masks.
Hear me out. What if it couldn't block?
Yeah, it'd probably be fine if it made a treasure. Like, remember when every card that made a treasure... Hey, wait. Remember when Alter's Reap was bad? It didn't make a treasure, did it? Are you still there?
I don't know that card.
You don't know Alter's Reap? I think it's one in a black, sacrifice a creature, draw two cards. I could be totally wrong there. It's an instant, so yes, it is literally functional Deadly Dispute without a treasure. So I think that when you add a treasure to anything, I mean, the sky's the limit. And so my thing is, I didn't play any Commander Legends in paper, so I have not got to witness how bad the young red dragon is in paper already, which other people have vouched. It's terrible. And so that might be where I'm wrong, is that I'm coming in on like 4-0. You know, I have my young red dragon colored glasses on right now, and I think that treasure's worth it. I think a 3/2 flyer, even if it can't block, if the red white aggro deck is reasonable. The other thing about the young red dragon, I think it's a great spot for the boon counters. If you are able to pump that thing up like +2/+0 into like an Ebon Death or something that, you know, doesn't have all the upside of being able to cast from the graveyard, I still like the young red dragon. And it'll probably take me about 4 or 5 drafts until I realize it's unplayable, but I'm here to give it a shot.
Here's the thing. If young red dragon was exactly the 3/2 flying for 4 that can't block and made a treasure when it came into play, it would be fine. It wouldn't be good. It'd be fine.
It'd be worse than it is.
That's on your, if you just add a treasure to a card, it makes a huge difference.
So, but the thing is with the young red dragon is you can use the treasure to cast itself. So it's kind of like a secret Saruf's packmate, minus the good part of draw a card. Huh? Huh? Maybe? No?
No, no.
Just me.
Come on, Maggie. Come on.
I like attacking. I want to cast this thing on turn 3 off of the treasure that it makes, and it's probably going to be way too slow for the format. But I want to do it once, and I have a dream that it will be great.
On a bright note, though, if Young Red Dragon ends up being good, you can tell everybody to shove it and that you were the only one.
Yep, that's the truth. All right, so if you want a less hot adventure take, Blessed Hippogriff is the truth. 2-3 flyer, upside for 4, and it's got kind of like cameo safekeeping, like secret going on. I think that card's going to be great. I think that's a little less debatable. Like, what are your thoughts there on the Blessed Hippogriff?
That it's good.
Okay, cool. We'll take those.
When you're in any kind of aggressive white deck, you want that protection trick for 1 mana. It's a 1 mana trick.
It's so free.
But you get a creature.
Yep, and no lands enter the battlefield tapped, so you can always squeeze it in. Well, one cycle does, but you're not going to have more than one or two, I don't think, most times.
I know I've said this in a billion different places at this point, but the tap lands don't matter that they come to play tap because there aren't other tap lands in the format.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no Evolving Wilds. There's no dual lands that gain a life or whatever. There's no snow lands. It's just that's the only one. And they're uncommons. How many are you realistically going to have? Maybe 2 tops?
So they are uncommons, in which case I totally agree with you because I don't really think about tap. If it's a super aggressive format, which we only have a couple 1-drops, so I don't think like incredibly aggressive, but I typically don't worry about the first one ever. And so like 2 or 3 is pretty uncommon if you're talking uncommons. You know, I thought about not making that pun, but what do you think there?
I'm going to be honest. I got distracted for a minute.
It's probably good you missed my joke there because it was terrible. So hopefully you don't catch it netting and it sticks.
Oh, I'll leave it. If you make bad, I mean, come on. I somehow got away with putting a Rider Drider pun joke into an article. I have not gotten a complaint about that, and I am ashamed of myself for that one.
Yep. And I thought we were going to make it through an entire episode preview of Baldur's Gate without Drider getting mentioned, but here we are. Why can't you be good? Come on, Drider. 1 time. Be good.
Not, man.
It's come
not.
On.
It's one of those cards that if you lose to, you would have lost to anything.
Oh, yeah. If you lose to Drider, you were never winning.
That wraps up your hypotheses on this format.
Yep. My main take was that I'm extremely high on adventure, and even the bad adventure cards will be playable. It's kind of like my too long didn't read on hypotheses.
That brings us to cool play of the week. Our good buddy Mad Moses managed to Final of Eternity for X equals 10, bringing back an absurd amount of creatures, including Hostage Taker to further clear the way, along with giving enough blue pips to bring Thassa online, give him Xaxes with Rankle as well.
You love to see it. I was actually going to mention that one because I have not made many cool plays. However, I think this was the last day of Chromatic Cube, and I have seen so many cool plays on the internet from Chromatic Cube. It really looks like a well-designed cube that I enjoyed playing a few times as well.
The best part about him getting Xaxes off that, though, was that one of the creatures he brought back was Kitesail Freebooter, and he saw that his opponent had not one, but 2 sweepers in hand.
You love to see it.
It was pretty awesome. All right, so before we go to Benji's bad beat of the week.
Oh, yes, I do have one.
I saw Chris on stream where he was playing Double Masters. And he played out his skin render on an open board just to get the 3-3 out.
Wow.
And unfortunately, he learned that that ability is not a May. That poor guy.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I felt so bad for
him. I haven't cast that card since Scars, so I forgot as well. I don't know if it's any master set in between, but I remember that being a top pick from Scars of Limited. Scars of Mirrodin Limited, that is.
Not Scars of New Capenna?
True.
The set that launched a million constructed games.
Oh no. Oh no. Do you want my...
Oh, we want your beat.
Okay. Well, if we're talking constructed games, over the weekend played in the Pioneer Super Qualifier, and I played Old Faithful Lotus Field because it's just the only deck I own on Magic Online. But I actually started off 4-0 in the Pioneer Super. Then I lost a tough game that I probably made a mistake. Won again, I was 5-1, so I needed like another 3-0 to make top 8. But I ended up pairing against a blue-red deck that after sideboarding, they went turn 2 Damping Sphere, turn 3 Narset, turn 4 Day's Undoing. And it was really sad after the fact when I saw their deck list that they only had 1 Damping Sphere in the whole list and they played it on turn 2 there, knocking me out of contention for top 8 and then taking away my entire hand in the following turn. But, you know, I mean, when you play degenerate combo decks, you have those things happen, and I just thought it was a bad beat that they drew their one-off Damping Sphere against me, but you know, comes with the territory.
All right, that brings us to the end of the episode. Come check out our totally free Discord where you can get deck decks, pick advice, check out trophy decks, discuss limited, or, you know, just chill. You can find the whole draft lab on Twitch at J2S Josh, Florida Bun, Icky, EcoTV, to Jordan, and to Four. Don't forget to check out mtgazone.com for awesome strategy articles by the draft lab. Well, that's 48 episodes in, and I can assure you that Chris is definitely still alive and not at all tied up in my closet.
Woo! Dryder!